perhaps if you come to this Mass regularly, you're used to it, this 5 p.m. Mass. I'm not used to it. I very seldom have Masses at this time, so I've been trying to adjust all afternoon because it feels like Saturday afternoon. Well, it is Saturday afternoon by our usual way of reckoning time, no? So that's the adjustment. When we enter into the Mass, especially this anticipated Sunday Mass, we are, in a sense, leaving the usual time zone of the world, and we're entering into another time, into God's time, or you could call it liturgical time. And in liturgical time, this is the beginning of the 23rd Sunday, so it's Sunday liturgy. I assume you know that, and that's why you're here. But because it feels like adjusting to another time zone, and I have experience with this, it kind of helps me to think like that, because in the Philippines, where I've been living for 32 years now, it's about 5 in the morning, or 5:15 in the morning, on Sunday. So it's already Sunday there. So good enough. Sunday there, then it's also Sunday here. Okay. Anyway, it's a beautiful day. It's a beautiful afternoon, you probably noticed. And it's Labor Day weekend. It's kind of the last hurrah of the summer in the United States. And a lot of people would not think of taking a beautiful Saturday afternoon and using it as a time to worship God. But here you are. So good for you. At the end of today's gospel, Jesus said, "Where two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I in the midst of them." Well, there's more than two or three here. In fact, more than I expected. Anyway, good for you. So here we are together to worship the Lord. Worship the Lord together. Actually, to worship the Lord together with the whole church. Because Sunday is the day of the Lord, and it's the day of the church. It's the anchor of the whole week, foundation of the whole week. And everyone in the church throughout the world gathers today to listen to the word, to listen to these very readings which we just heard, to ponder them, also to prepare ourselves to worship Jesus in the Eucharist. So that's what we're doing here. Now, the liturgy, the readings today are very rich, as they always are, and there's more than we can possibly address. I'm just going to start out our focus on the beginning of today's gospel. Jesus' statement is, "If your brother sins against you," if, you could have said when, because although "if" is a much softer and milder and better way to say it, but it's, we could have said when, because this does happen to us. At some point, we will be offended. We have already been offended at some point. Someone has sinned against us. We're not talking about some weird churchy language or churchy incident. We're not talking about some, you know, mystical, theological, rare, you know, something reserved for monks on a mountain. We're talking about a very common experience when we offend one another. And Jesus is not giving heavy theology here. He's giving very practical advice what to do when someone offends us. But before we even get to the four steps which he gives, very, very clear four steps for correcting an offender, let's start where he starts. He starts with, "If your brother sins against you." If your brother, if your sister, if your neighbor, your classmate, your colleague offends you, if he or she snaps at you, or cuts you off in traffic, or takes credit for work you have done, or cheats you, or steals from you, or betrays you, or mocks you. You get the picture. I mean, these are all things that we experience. In fact, all too often. If this happens, and it happens all the time, then what do you do? What do you do? Well, you get him back, of course. Or you cut him off, you cut her off. Or you talk about her to people who you know will sympathize with you. Oh yeah, she's really a... some bad words. But this is our natural reaction. Gossip, complaining, talking to our friends, building up a case against the one who offended me, actually making it worse. So that's not the Christian response. And that's not what Jesus says we should do. These are not the right way to respond. If we sin because someone sins against us, we're making it worse, not better. So don't do that. Actually, to think about this, even before we get to what Jesus is talking about, turn this around for just a second. Because he starts out with, if your brother sins against you. Well, turn it around. What if you're the offender? What if you're the one who sins against someone? What do you want that person to do to you? You want him or her to gossip about you? You want him to attack you? You want him to post something nasty about you online? No, we don't want that. And you know the principle, do unto others as you would have others do unto you. Well, because we're all offenders too, what do we want people to do? Now there's an important insight here that we as Christians have, which other people, actually even as Christians, it's hard for us to get this, but let me just share it with you. When a person sins, even if it's against us, that person, spiritually, that person does more harm to himself than to his victim. This is hard for us to get, but when a person sins, he does more harm to himself, because sin automatically carries with it terrible consequences on the sinner. The person who has to bear the brunt of that sin can, with God's grace, with help, can actually rise above it, can actually endure with patience, can actually practice love of neighbor, even love of enemies, which is what Jesus calls us to. We can, with God's help, benefit from the offense. It's radical to think like this, but it's true. We learn this from the lives of the saints. Sometimes you hear in the lives of the saints, as they talk about their experiences, they mention how grateful they are that they have been mistreated, because it gave them an opportunity to rise, to grow holy. Okay, now I know that might be beyond what we think and beyond what we're capable of, but this is actually what we're called to. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful way to transcend this pattern of sin and then counter sin and, you know, backbiting and retaliating. There is a way out of this. Okay. That's all background. Now let's get to this gospel. Jesus says, if your brother sins against you, and then he gives four clear steps. You could almost say simple steps. This is one of the most clear instructions of Jesus. First step, talk to the offender alone. Second step, if that doesn't work, bring in two or three others. Talk with them. Just a few of you, don't bring it up. Third step, if that doesn't work, bring it to the church. If that doesn't work, then treat him like a Gentile or a tax collector. Now, steps three and four are really quite rare, so I'm not going to go into that. Although, not long ago, we had a kind of a public example of that with the excommunication of the disobedient group that at the consecrated bishops, SSPX, what is it? Society of St. Pius X, they consecrated bishops in disobedience to the church, and they were excommunicated. Well, that's an example of step number four. It's not hatred, it's not condemnation, it's a separation for the sake of conversion. So anyway, that's the rare case. Let's stick with step number one. Step number one, if your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. This is the most important of the four steps. This is by far the most important. This is the foundation of the whole work of reconciliation. If someone offends us, the first thing we should do is address it privately with the one who offends us. the most important step, but also by far the hardest. Probably you know this. I don't have to explain it. It's hardest. This is the step that we most often do not take. Either we don't do anything at all, or we don't say anything at all, we just take it. Or we talk to other people, in fact, we talk to anybody other than the person who offended us. But that's not the right way. Jesus says, if your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. Why don't we do it? Because it's hard. It's hard to correct people. We don't know what's going to happen. It's frightening. We're out of control. It doesn't seem like a very good thing to do. Or even if it does seem like a good thing to do, it's hard. So here, another example of the gospel, which is beautiful and true, is also challenging and hard. That's the way the gospel is sometimes. We don't know how it will come out. It might get worse if we do that. It might get worse. Jesus actually acknowledges that it might get worse. That's why he gives us step two and step three and step four. It might not work the way we want, but hopefully it will. Listen to what he says. If he listens to you, you have won your brother over. Not that you have won the battle, you have won him over to Christ, won him over to holiness. So that is a victory. It's not a personal victory, it's a victory for the kingdom of God. Okay. If it's so hard to do, if it's so frightening, if there's such a great risk that it might not work out, then why do it at all? Because it's the most loving thing to do. It's the most loving response to an offense, and we're called to love. That was in today's second reading, no? Love is the fulfillment of the law. Love your neighbor as yourself fulfills the commandments. And so this is an example of how to love our neighbor, in this case, an offender. Now, since I'm talking about a challenging thing, I'm going to have to tell a personal story here, and this is a very embarrassing one. But I think it came to me, and I said, I better tell the story. Back when I was, when I first moved to Corning, or when I lived in Corning, this back in the 1980s, I'm a young man, very idealistic, very self-righteous, and a coward. So I was, I attended Mass at one of, there were four parishes back then. And this incident did not happen here. This was St. Mary's at the time. So I was at another parish, I don't know why. Went to Mass there, and the priest said something that violated the truth of the Catholic faith. I don't remember the priest, I don't remember his name, to be honest. Even if I did remember it, I wouldn't tell you, but because this is about me. But he said something about the time when women will be priests and about the future, how it's going to be, and it was definitely off base. And I got all upset. Well, first of all, it was wrong. It was wrong. So what did I do? I wrote a letter to the papal nuncio. That's the embarrassing part. This priest here in this little town, Corning, said this, and this is so terrible. So what did the nuncio do? He wrote back to me, or one of his secretaries probably wrote it, but some official documentation. This is Washington, D.C., right? The representative of the Pope in the country, I mean, as high as you can go, except he could have written to the Vatican, I suppose. But that's the equivalent of writing to the Pope. He writes back to me, he says, surely you have a concern here. Thank you for sharing your concern. Surely you would do well to speak to Father so-and-so. Of course, that's the plain instruction of today's gospel. First, talk to the offender alone. That's the first step. In other words, brother, you skipped over step one and two and three. You went to step three, talk to the church. Okay, so that was my... Why did I do that? Because I was afraid to talk to the priest. Who isn't? Actually, I have to give a little side point here. In this matter of correcting, there is a factor which can sometimes make it even more difficult and maybe even impossible. That is correcting a superior. Like, children can't correct their parents, or hardly can. So they're at a big disadvantage. And it's hard for a young layman like I was to correct a priest, or for anyone to correct the boss. I mean, it can sometimes still be necessary. We have to take that risk, but sometimes it's practically impossible. So I acknowledge that. And I especially want to acknowledge, because when people are taking advantage or abusing someone under them, the victim sometimes has no recourse directly to the offender. That we have to acknowledge that. So that's a separate case. Okay. Let's reflect on what happens when we take step one. I hope I'm not going too long here. I don't see any clocks. It's quarter to one on that clock, so I don't know what time zone that is. Anyway, I said we're in God's time. I'll finish up here in just a moment. What happens when we take step one? Well, it's a bit risky, but the first thing that can happen is the person who offended us might discover that he said something or did something offensive. He might not even know. Oh, I didn't realize that would offend you. I didn't realize that was wrong. I didn't realize, I don't remember saying that or whatever. I mean, the person might accept light and beautiful, good fruit. That can happen. If he listens to you, you have won your brother over. Thanks be to God. It can also happen that the person who offended you will say, well, it's because you did this. And it could be true. It can be, we discover, and here's light, not just shining light on the other person, but light shining on us. I'm part of the problem here. I triggered this offensive behavior. I did something that I didn't realize was wrong, and the person tells me. That's also good fruit. A little bit painful, but good fruit. Good fruit from taking this step one. It can also happen that the person agrees to work it out, and this is probably the more common thing. Well, okay, I didn't mean to make a big deal out of this, and maybe you shouldn't either, but let's compromise a little bit. That's also good fruit. At least there's a growth in the relationship. Good fruit. It can also happen that the person denies that he did that or that it was bad. That's a lot harder. It can also happen that he is violent, he or she, violent refusal and blows up at you. That can also happen. So if bad things can happen, why do it? Because it's worth the risk. This is the risk of love. This is loving until it hurts. This is putting into practice what the gospel tells us, love your neighbor as yourself. Sometimes loving our neighbor means taking the risk that our neighbor will not love us back, and that's still a good thing to do. Challenging, but still a good thing to do. If it doesn't work, it still bears fruit. Even when it's a disaster, the fruit that it bears is that it moves us on to step number two, which is talk to two or three other people who also love the offender and will take steps to try to help him or her. That's good. It doesn't mean you go out and talk to anybody you want to. Talk to somebody who you know will be objective and be loving and help work toward reconciliation. Remember, the goal is reconciliation, not retaliation. Okay. I want to conclude here, because I mentioned this thing about loving till it hurts. The reason why I'm taking this step is because September 5th, which was Saturday, is the feast day of St. Mother Teresa of Calcutta. And so I've been thinking about her all day when it was still Saturday. And I thought I'm going to conclude with a little reflection from St. Mother Teresa, because she knows this business about loving with a smile, about loving until it hurts. And that expression, love until it hurts, she used all the time, if you know Mother Teresa, love until it hurts. And that kind of language is really troublesome. Why? Why should I love until it hurts? I mean, it's one thing to love. Great, that's the commandment. But what's this business about hurting? I don't want to hurt. And this is the fuller quotation from Mother Teresa, which I think will be a good conclusion for us. She says this, "I have found the paradox that if you love until it hurts, there can be no more hurt, only more love." I love that. Transcends the hurt. That's why it's worth it, even though it can be difficult and painful and messy. "I have found the paradox that if you love until it hurts, there can be no more hurt, only more love." That's what the Lord's calling us to do. Amen.